Today is Monday, May 3rd, and you're listening to International Edition on The Voice of America. I am Chinedu Ofor, broadcasting from Washington, D.C. Coming up, U.S. bans flights from India over COVID surge.
We are concerned about variants. We're concerned about spread. We're concerned about the loss of life that emerges as this pandemic rages out of control in India.
Also, Myanmar security forces kill several protesters.
Myanmar security forces opened fire on protesters on Sunday, killing at least 8 people.
Plus, UN officials express concern about the welfare of Bahrain prisoners. These stories and more are next. The U.S. has restricted travel from India as the South Asian nation struggles in the grip of a devastating surge of the coronavirus. The Biden administration is sending supplies, but some ask if the U.S. should be doing more. Michelle Quinn reports.
As scenes of India struggling with a deadly surge ricochet around the world, the Biden administration is responding to the crisis. It is sending supplies such as personal protective equipment, oxygen, test kits, masks, and more. Travel from India to the U.S. will be restricted starting Tuesday. Jake Sullivan is the U.S. National Security Advisor. He spoke to ABC this week.
We are concerned about variants. We're concerned about spread. We're concerned about the loss of life and also all of the secondary effects that emerge as this pandemic rages out of control in India.
India currently has more than 19 million confirmed cases and more than 215,000 deaths, according to the Johns Hopkins University's Coronavirus Resource Center. More than one-third of Americans are fully vaccinated against COVID-19, the disease caused by the virus. With some states saying they have enough vaccines, the Biden administration said it would share with countries needing help 60 million doses of the AstraZeneca vaccine, which hasn't been approved in the U.S. Public health experts say the U.S. should do what it can to help India and other countries that are struggling. Dr. Ashish Jha is the dean of Brown University's School of Public Health. He spoke to ABC this week.
We've got to help India get this under control for a variety of reasons. The humanitarian ones, certainly there are geopolitical issues. But from a pure public health point of view, that large of an outbreak also is fertile ground for more variants.
Biden's chief of staff, Ron Klain, said on CBS News' Face the Nation, the U.S. has sent India enough of the raw materials it needs to make 20 million doses of India's version of the Oxford AstraZeneca vaccine. Some U.S. lawmakers, led by Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders, say the administration should relax patent rules so countries can quickly produce generic versions of the vaccines, something pharmaceutical firms oppose, citing possible safety issues. The Biden administration will soon announce how we can get this vaccine more widely distributed, more widely licensed, more widely shared, Klain said. Michelle Quinn, VOA News.
India has recorded nearly 400,000 new coronavirus infections a day over the past several days, and more than 3,400 deaths a day have been listed as officially from COVID-19. However, there are fears that thousands of coronavirus deaths are unrecorded as a catastrophic surge sweeps through the country. As medical facilities struggle to cope with surging cases of coronavirus, a court in New Delhi has said it will start punishing government officials who failed to deliver life-saving oxygen. AP correspondent Karen Chamas reports.
The ruling comes as hospitals around the country struggle to secure a steady supply of oxygen, leading to a surge in COVID-19 deaths. Whilst there has recently been a slight drop in new infections, India has reported over 3,600 new deaths, bringing the total number of deaths to over 215,000. However, experts believe both figures are an undercount. New Delhi resident Urvashi Sharma believes the Indian government aren't coping.
They're not prepared for anything. We don't have enough ventilators in one hospital. Forget about all the whatever we need for the entire city or the entire nation.
Meanwhile, international oxygen supplies have been trickling in. Qatar Airways CEO Akbar Al Bakir says his company is dedicated to helping India in its time of need.
We are sending three freighters tomorrow, nose to tail. One to Delhi, one to Bangalore, and one to Mumbai.
I'm Karen Chamas.
Uganda's Ministry of Health reports that it is recording new variants of the coronavirus. The variants detected by researchers include the COVID-19 variant first identified in India, which prompted the country to suspend all flights coming in from India. The Indian community in Uganda has welcomed the move, prioritizing public safety. Halima Atumani reports from Kampala.
Effective May 1st at midnight, no flights from India shall be allowed into Uganda. The new directive follows the Ministry of Health researchers detecting one case of the coronavirus disease, an Indian variant, in the East African country. India has so far recorded more than 18.8 million COVID-19 cases, with deaths soaring to upwards of 200,000 in the past week, with new infection cases surpassing the 400,000 mark. Dr. Jen Ruth Acheng, Uganda's Minister for Health, outlined the travel restrictions.
All passenger flights between Uganda and India are suspended until further notice. No travelers from India shall be allowed into Uganda, regardless of the route of travel.
Acheng also stressed that all travelers who may have been in India or traveled through India in the last 14 days or about 2 weeks, regardless of route taken, shall not be allowed into Uganda. She says Uganda has so far recorded 399 cases out of the five variants circulating in Uganda. Other variants identified include variants from Nigeria, the United Kingdom, and South Africa.
The variants currently circulating include the following: the Indian variant, the South African variant, the Nigerian variant, the United Kingdom variant, and the Ugandan variant.
The Ugandan variant that is now reported in 34 countries has registered 135 cases, 15 cases of the South African variant, 15 of the United Kingdom variants, 13 cases of the Nigerian variant, and one case of the Indian variant currently being treated at Uganda's Mulago National Referral Hospital. Minister Cheng says even though the epidemiological distribution and impact of these variants in Uganda is currently unknown, they continue to study the progression. Mohan Rao is the head of the Indian Association in Uganda, a community-led organization. He says even though the cancellation of flights is going to affect trade and other engagements, the association welcomes the move. Rao says they have written to the Ministry of Health seeking permission to carry out a sensitization drive among the Indian community.
You see, some people will feel shy or agree I have corona. You know, you need to come out openly. Yes, I have this. I'm isolating myself. For me, what I wanted to sensitize, corona is not a big disease. It is only just stay around and take a timely treatment. You have to take it. Then you will come out with the flying colors.
He has been sending text messages to members of the community and also wants to have community meetings. These are allowed in Uganda as long as people wear masks and social distance with a limit of 200 people at a time. Back in March, India was one of the countries that donated 100,000 doses of the AstraZeneca vaccine to Uganda as it kicked off distributing vaccination among frontline workers, such as healthcare professionals and other service providers. In an address to the country in March, President Yoweri Museveni noted it was becoming riskier for a country like Uganda to depend on external vaccine support to curb the spread of COVID-19.
Because like India now has got a very big rise in the cases. They are in a very big crisis. They are struggling to solve their own problems. And here we are waiting also in line to get support from them. This is not correct.
Since March 2020, Uganda has recorded 41,866 COVID cases and 342 deaths. Halima Athmani for VA News, Kampala, Uganda.
High-ranking diplomats from China, Germany, France, Russia, and Britain are set to resume talks focused on bringing the U.S. back into the landmark nuclear deal with Iran. AP correspondent Zoya Shakili reports.
The U.S. will not have a representative at the table when diplomats meet in Vienna because former President Donald Trump unilaterally pulled the country out of the deal, known as the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action in 2018. Trump also restored and augmented sanctions to try to force Iran into renegotiating the pact with more concessions. President Joe Biden wants to rejoin the deal. A U.S. delegation in Vienna is taking part in indirect talks with Iran, with diplomats from other world powers acting as go-betweens. I'm Zaria Shakili.
Also on the diplomatic front, the foreign ministers of a group of seven leading democracies begin their first in-person meeting in more than a year today in Britain. The meeting is a prelude to the G7 Leaders Summit in June and is seen as part of an effort to address issues such as the coronavirus recovery, climate change, and how to deal with China and Russia. The G7 nations are Britain, Canada, France, Germany, Italy, Japan, and the US. Britain also invited foreign ministers from Australia, India, South Africa, and South Korea to the gathering. Myanmar is on edge after several protesters were killed when security forces opened fire on some of the biggest protests against military rule in days, which organizers said would, quote, shake the world with the voice of Myanmar people's unity, unquote. Chris Dingham of Reuters reports.
Myanmar security forces opened fire on protesters on Sunday, killing at least 8 people in some of the biggest demonstrations against military rule in days, 3 months after a coup plunged the country into crisis. Local media reported that the protests were coordinated with demonstrations in Myanmar communities around the world to mark what organizers called the Global Myanmar Spring Revolution. Streams of demonstrators made their way through cities and towns across the country, including the commercial hub of Yangon. The deaths reported by multiple local media outlets were spread out across different cities and towns. Reuters could not verify the reports, and a spokesman for the ruling junta did not answer calls seeking comment. A video obtained by Reuters showed 2 Myanmar police officers and 2 men in plain clothes detaining 3 people on the street in Yangon on Sunday and putting them in what appears to be a civilian car. The protests come in the wake of the February 1st ouster of the government led by Aung San Suu Kyi. Wars with ethnic minority insurgents have also intensified since the coup, displacing tens of thousands of civilians, according to United Nations estimates.
That's Chris Dingham of Reuters. Gasoline trucks burst into flames in Kabul overnight, killing at least 7 people and starting large fires that caused power cuts to some parts of the Afghan capital. Maha Abadrawi of Reuters reports.
Gasoline tanker trucks burst into flames in Kabul overnight, killing at least 7 people, injuring more than a dozen, and causing power cuts to parts of the Afghan capital, officials said on Sunday. An eyewitness described fleeing after 3 back-to-back explosions caused huge fires to break out, and returning home the next morning to find their windows and doors shattered. The cause of ignition was not immediately known, but the fires come as the city remains on high alert, with officials bracing for attacks from the insurgent Taliban over foreign troops' continued presence in the country. The Taliban have said US President Joe Biden's announcement last month that American troops would leave by September 11th violates a 2020 agreement under the Trump administration that offered a May 1st withdrawal deadline. 2 security sources had earlier told Reuters they believed the fire was caused by a Taliban rocket fired in the area. However, Taliban spokesperson Zabihullah Mujahid has said they were not involved. A separate shooting incident on Saturday in Kandahar prompted the commander of foreign forces in Afghanistan to warn that attacks on foreign troops would be a mistake and that they would defend themselves and Afghan forces if needed.
That's Maha Abadrawi of Reuters. On Monday, Apple faces a court trial that could upend its iron control over its App Store, which brings in billions of dollars each year while feeding more than 1.6 billion iPhones, iPads, and other devices. The case comes up from Epic Games, maker of the popular video game Fortnite. Epic charges that Apple has transformed its once tiny digital storefront into an illegal monopoly that squeezes mobile apps for a slice of their earnings. Apple denies the charge and seeks to depict Epic as the would-be freeloader on its App Store. Financial analyst Dan Ives of Wedbush Securities says the trial involving Apple's App Store is one of its most serious legal threats in years.
Epic, they're putting themselves out there. I mean, Fortnite Mobile being taken off the App Store, that was a major strategic risk. And they're really taking one, you could call it for the team.
That's financial analyst Dan Ives of Wedbush Securities. This is the Voice of America. A committee of journalists in Pakistan says the media is increasingly facing censorship, attacks, and harassment. The Pakistan Federal Union of Journalists on Monday vowed to keep up the struggle for press freedom in a country that's long been a deadly place for journalists. In the past year, there were 148 attacks or violations against journalists. Pakistan insists it supports freedom of speech and there are no curbs on the media. New Zealand Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern took a tougher stance on China's human rights record by saying it was getting harder to reconcile differences as China's role in the world grows. While Ardern's language remains moderate when compared with that of many other leaders, it still marked a significant shift for a country that relies on China as its largest trading partner. You are listening to International Edition on The Voice of America. I am Chinedu Ofor, broadcasting from Washington, D.C. UN officials are expressing deep concern about the welfare of dozens of prisoners held incommunicado in Bahrain since police brutality broke up a peaceful sit-in protesting prison conditions. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
The Office of the UN High Commissioner for Human Rights says police special forces put an end to a sit-in on April 17th in Bahrain's Jau prison. The protest began April 5th, following the death of political prisoner Abbas Mal'Ala, who reportedly had been refused medical treatment. Authorities have denied these charges, claiming he died of natural causes. UN Human Rights spokeswoman Marta Hurtado says police violently repressed the peaceful sit-in, reportedly using unnecessary and disproportionate force to dismantle the protest.
According to accounts received from eyewitnesses of the incident, special forces threw stun grenades and beat detainees on their heads, badly injuring many of them. The authorities reportedly took 33 protesters to another building into the prison, where they have been kept incommunicado and have been unable to make contact with families or lawyers in violation of both national and international law.
Tensions have been rising in Jau prison since an outbreak of COVID-19 in the notoriously overcrowded facility. The lack of health care in the country's prison system has been an issue for years. The spread of the pandemic in Bahrain's prisons has sparked protests across the country. In response, Hurtado says the authorities have detained dozens of protesters for breaching COVID-19 restrictions.
We call on the government to immediately launch a thorough and effective investigation into the violent repression of the sit-in at Jau prison. We also urge them to provide information on the well-being of the 33 prisoners currently held in incomunicado detention, and to ensure they are able to contact their lawyers and families.
The Bahrain Institute for Rights and Democracy says at least 60 political prisoners are missing. Since the start of the pandemic, the government has pardoned more than 1,250 prisoners. The UN High Commissioner's Office is calling on Bahrain authorities to release more detainees to ease prison congestion. This action, it adds, would reduce the risk of the coronavirus spreading throughout the prison population and through the wider public as well. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
North Korea lashed out at the United States and its allies in South Korea on Sunday in a series of statements saying recent comments from Washington are proof of a hostile policy that requires a corresponding response from Pyongyang. Lauren Anthony of Reuters reports.
North Korea lashed out at the United States on Sunday in a series of statements, saying recent comments from Washington are proof of hostile intent that require a response from Pyongyang. The statements put out by state news agency KCNA come after the White House on Friday said U.S. officials had completed a months-long review of North Korean policy. One saw a foreign ministry spokesman accusing Washington of insulting the dignity of the country's supreme leadership by critiquing North Korea's human rights record. The unnamed spokesman added that the remarks show the U.S. is, quote, girding itself up for an all-out showdown with North Korea and will be answered accordingly. In a separate statement, Kwon Jong-un, Director General of the Foreign Ministry's U.S. Affairs Department, cited Biden's first policy speech to Congress on Wednesday. The new president had said nuclear programs in North Korea and Iran posed threats that would be addressed through diplomacy and stern deterrence. something Kwon branded illogical and an encroachment on North Korea's right to self-defense. He added that U.S. talk of diplomacy is aimed at covering up its hostile acts, and its deterrence is just a means for posing nuclear threats to North Korea. Kwon concluded that North Korea would, quote, be compelled to press for corresponding measures now Biden's policy has become clear, adding that with time, the U.S. will find itself in a very grave situation. In a third statement on Sunday, Kim Yo-jong, a senior official in the government and sister of leader Kim Jong-un, sharply criticized South Korea for failing to stop defector activists from producing anti-North Korea leaflets. The White House and State Department did not immediately comment on the North Korean statements.
That's Lauren Anthony of Reuters. Senegal has a long history of interfaith respect and tolerance. In honor of that, young Christians made a goodwill gesture by distributing snacks to Muslims breaking their fasts one evening during the holy month of Ramadan. Alison Lekego Fernandez reports from Dakar. Carol Greensburg narrates.
An hour before sunset, dozens of young people have gathered in a Dakar school. Mostly Christians, they're hurriedly bagging breads, dates, other snacks and drinks to hand out to needy Muslims ready to break their daily Ramadan fasts. It's an iftar on the go. Marie Cardinal, a nurse and one of the iftar organizers, says the effort grew out of a joking exchange on a Facebook page called Going Out in Senegal. The page has roughly 13,000 followers of all faiths. One February day during Lent, the 40-day period of sacrifice leading up to the Christian celebration of Easter, someone posted a sight gag about meatless Fridays.
The Muslims went to Serras, a slaughterhouse, to eat good meat. They took pictures and posted these to the group. It was just to spoof us, so we thought we would do a comeback.
So, in the midst of Ramadan, Cardinal and others posted photos of delicious foods to tease their Muslim friends, who fast during the day. Everyone had a few laughs. Then Cardinal's group got serious and decided to gather food to give out. In less than 72 hours, they had collected breads, dates, and other foods, enough to prepare more than 2,500 bags. Ousmane Koli, a Muslim, wanted to join in the iftar effort.
I saw that it is social work. I came to contribute to the distribution. I am very happy seeing that we are helping people in need. It gives me joy.
Suleiman Diallo, an apprentice bus driver, appreciates the gesture.
People need this. It is a very good initiative. In Senegal, Christians and Muslims have always lived in perfect harmony. Each respect the faith and beliefs of the other. It's not new.
Senegal's nearly 7 million people are overwhelmingly Muslim, 95%, and Christians account for 5%, or 1 in 19 people. The West African country has a long history of peaceful interfaith relations. For Alison Lekogo Fernandez in Dakar, Carol Gunsberg, VOA Africa.
NASA and SpaceX said the return to Earth of four astronauts, three Americans, one Japanese from the International Space Station Sunday, brings us even closer to citizen space flights to the moon and even Mars one day. AP correspondent Judy Walker reports.
SpaceX's Dragon capsule splashed down off the coast of Florida just before 3 a.m., ending the second astronaut flight for Elon Musk's company. Representative Hans Koenigsmann.
The SpaceX and NASA teams returned human spaceflight back to the United States, and I think this is a remarkable achievement, the opportunity of a lifetime.
He says they're looking forward to many more flights
to the space station and beyond Moon and Mars.
NASA's Kathy Leader says they're on board.
Our goal is one day that everyone's a space person, and so this is just an exciting first step for that.
Dragon capsule was the same one that took the astronauts in November, and the splashdown was the first U.S. in darkness since the Apollo 8 moonshot. I'm Julie Walker.
That's it for our show today. For more in-depth and breaking news 24 hours a day, please visit voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Nadia Taha, and our managing editor, Kate Pound-Dawson, I am Chinedu Ofo in Washington. Thank you so much for listening and have a great day.